Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you're listening to episode 46 with the wonderful man himself, Charles Yule of Art Crank.
The wonderful man. He was a great guest, a great guy, humble, thoughtful, and insightful.
Yeah, he totally was. And that was a fun one. It was in studio, which was a nice change of pace for us. And if you're not familiar with Art Crank, it's this really cool thing that I've gone to the past few years, basically where they take, it's a poster party for bike people is what it's named, but it takes a lot of like kind of advertising design folks, puts on this art show, and they make these amazing posters. All these designers design them, and you can go buy them and drink beer and eat cool food. It's like really great.
It's a great atmosphere. It's really festive. I've gone the last few years as well. It's a lot of fun. And it was fun talking about it. And what else we talked about was this phenomenon in creative work where a person can't just be a super specialist. Mm-hmm. Not if you're trying to kind of do bigger things. You have to wear many hats. And even more so than that, you have to kind of have split personalities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something we talk about a lot. And when I met Charles, it was like, right away, we gravitated towards that subject. It was like we both struggle with that sometimes. So that was really cool to chat with him. And I want to throw a shout out to our sponsor this week, Simplecast. I get a lot of people who hit me up for advice about podcasting. They want to know how to get started. It's really pretty easy, especially when you use software like Simplecast, which for us, it's kind of a plug and play. You know, that's what we publish this podcast through. It makes uploading our podcast, scheduling everything super, super easy. So if you're serious about, you know, starting out a podcast, definitely check out Simplecast. That's simplecast.fm. Thank you, Simplecast, for supporting the show. And man, hell of an episode.
Yeah, thank you, Simplecast. And thank you, Grant. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, all the moms out there. Thank you.
Shout out to the moms
for raising us. Yeah, this is episode 46. Enjoy.
Portland is Minneapolis at the speed of THC.
Wow. Now I'm
a new phrase. I hadn't heard that one.
We're going to save that one for the next time we have a Portland.
Perhaps for our break-in this episode.
Okay. Vinny, can you tell me what you're working on?
I'd love to, Grant. I'd love nothing more.
There's zero other things you'd like more than that.
Well, I guess we don't need to get into it. But I'm back. Work is back in the swing of things after the holidays, so that's keeping me busy, obviously. The new year means a new look into making sure my portfolio is up to date, which it's not. And we'll be working together, actually, in the near future,
yeah.
Making sure my new website is shiny and new and up to date.
It's really nice.
And, you know, it's also my birthday today.
Oh, so, yeah. Shit.
Recently, I have been planning the festivities.
So. Oh, yeah. Which I'm very excited to partake in.
Friday.
Am I on the list?
So I have to jump into this point. You are planning your own birthday festivities?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
no,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's just fine.
I mean, it's 2014.
I mean, that is very Capricorn of you. I will give you that. Yeah, because after all, who else is more qualified?
Yeah, exactly. My fellow Capricorn, who we'll introduce in just...
Mystery guest. I just want to keep that tension.
I appreciate that a lot. But yeah, so that's keeping me busy. Grant.
Lovely.
Grant.
Happy birthday, Vince.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. What have you been putting your time into lately?
Ooh, lots of pitches right now for some video projects. So a lot of that stuff. Writing up a couple of treatments, got some cool opportunities.
Stuff
which
wings.
Hopefully by the next show I'll be able to say we got. Or didn't get.
Fingers are crossed for you. As always,
crossed.
My friend. I have no doubt
that
you'll put your best foot forward. So
yeah.
That's awesome.
It's gonna be great.
Exciting.
Ooh, and right now I'm putting time into the cast. And I'm so excited. This is our second in-studio recording,
yes.
Finally. So a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of our recordings, especially, you know, we have people all over the country, in the UK, in Switzerland, you know, it's like, oftentimes we're recording over a call or Skype or whatever. But it's so nice to have a Minneapolitan. I already got myself.
I was like already. Yeah, I was like, I was going to get you.
That is your like natural position is just leaning in to try and correct
strike
me.
Like a viper.
You're so nice. A local luminary. No, he's somebody whose work I totally appreciate. It's really cool stuff. And I've been following it for a while. And that is the founder and creative director of ArtCrank, Mr. Charles Yule.
Good to be here.
Welcome to the program.
Welcome. Welcome
thank you,
very much.
Thank you. You know, I have to say, I think if more people knew about the lemurs, they would totally go for in studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we'll keep it under our hats for right now. But
yeah, well, that
major selling point.
Oh, secrets out. We're going to get
up guests mostly from Portland, Oregon, flocking.
Portland loves lemurs, yo.
Ain't that the truth? So, Mr. Yule, could you tell us what you're putting your time into right now, what you are working on?
Yes. Per the introduction, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I work on this poster show about bicycles called ArtCrank. We founded the show in Minneapolis in 2007, started going to other cities in 2009, and have kind of been on the expansion tip ever since. We just wrapped up our 2014 tour in November with our first show in Washington, D.C. That was our 14th event. In 2014.
Ooh, D.C.
Yes, D.C., our nation's capital.
Was Obama there?
You know, if Barry showed up, he kept it on the down low. We did not see direct evidence.
He had a Cubs hat on.
POTUS.
Real low.
Yeah.
He probably bought a couple posters.
That's really exciting, though.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think it was probably one of our best first year shows ever. Just pleasant surprise. I mean, new market for us. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
But people showed up. People bought art. People had a good time, and that's what we love to do.
That's it, man.
That's awesome.
The dream.
Absolutely. So just before we dig too deep into it, can you give a little bit more context as to what ArtCrank is?
Sure, absolutely. Basic idea behind the show is that we want to make art as accessible as bicycles are and use creativity to change the way people think about cycling. So the shows basically all work on a simple premise. We recruit a group of local artists from the host city, usually 25 to 40, depending on the size of the show and the size of our venue. And we ask all those artists to create posters about bikes or their experience with cycling. We then throw sort of pop-up art shows, usually one night only, in non-traditional venues that range from empty warehouses to bars to bike shops, where people can come, look at, appreciate, buy, and take home artwork for a very reasonable price.
Awesome. And as someone who's attended the last four ArtCranks and have been a big fan, I've had friends participate in ArtCrank, and it's very cool to see their work. It's very cool to see a selection of artists doing a selection of work. I always felt that it was like a perfect fit for Minneapolis because of our bike culture here. It's extremely dedicated bike culture. How has it been received in cities that maybe aren't as completely dialed in to bike culture?
Yeah, I think the pleasant revelation for me with ArtCrank, one, it's an opportunity for us to learn about creative cultures in other cities and kind of get to know that section of, you know, the community. When you come into a new city, you don't always get to get a feel for that. We just sort of dive into that head first with our shows. And what we found is that the things that make ArtCrank work in Minneapolis are present to some level, at least in almost every city in the U.S. Every city has a creative community. Every city has a cycling community. Usually those two communities, if you can picture a Venn diagram,
it's basically
two overlapping circles.
Yeah, it's like an overprint. There's just a little bit of
stamp
edges.
Another stamp.
There are few outliers on either side of that. I think, you know, certainly Minneapolis is one of the stronger examples of that. You know, there's always, you know, kind of the mostly friendly rivalry with Portland. But the strength of the cycling community and the creative community in all the places we go, even non-traditional cycling cities. We did shows in St. Louis for a number of years, which is where I grew up, where I'm from originally. Right. Not really a place that people think of as a bike town, but, you know, since the time that I moved away, you know, from there way back when in the late 80s to now, it's really, really developing. There's a great biking scene there. There's a lot of cycling infrastructure, and the creative community has developed right along with it. And you see how excited people are to have a chance to do work that doesn't necessarily involve a client or a budget or a creative brief. A lot of the artists that we work with, you know, they're independent creatives, they're freelancers, they work at agencies or design firms. They're not people who have their own art shows. And sometimes our events are the only chance they've ever had to show their work to people outside of their circle of friends. And just to create that opportunity for me, and that's probably the thing that I'm most proud of.
Absolutely, man. It's a real cool thing. I can attest to the coolness as well. I've been there the last few years. And if you'll notice, I have Alan Peters' two prints from the last.
Yeah,
up by my bed. Yeah, I
clocked those immediately. Thank you very much.
They're good. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I think this is a good segue into our topic: agency people or designers who have clients all day who don't get to do an art show. We're sort of talking about this idea of split personality, which was something that, you know, when we had connected prior, we had discussed slightly just in both of our stories. You know, being multiple things on different projects with different clients with different contexts. And so I think that's like a nice way to ease into this idea. Like, what does that mean to you, Mr. Vince, is what I'm curious about.
What is having a split personality?
Not in a schizophrenic way.
Benevolently schizophrenic.
Creatively
schizophrenic. Sometimes I honestly do feel like I am creatively schizophrenic. And you almost have to be to work in an agency, like I do, sometimes on a lower level of the totem pole where I'm executing things that maybe are less creatively nourishing. And so I have to put on that hat where I'm kind of a producer of words instead of a writer. And then sometimes where I'm working with you, maybe on a freelance project, I'm more of a partner, a creative, back and forth with you. And so, to me, split personality is just something that comes along with the territory of being a creative person and doing something creative for a living. Maybe if you did art without the commerce part of it, you could get away with having a single artistic manifestation. But I don't know that it's possible for me, at least.
So here's the interesting thing, though, is what I'm thinking right away when you're saying that is, like, you know, the projects we do together are always fun for you, right?
I always have a blast.
Yeah, but we've also like set the tone for that. And it's almost, it's kind of based in this idea of like you teach people how to treat you. It's almost like the way you, it's like a meet cute even. Like the way you meet like determines how you, I was talking to someone today who is like still getting started, somebody that I'm sort of like semi-mentoring. Uh-huh. And she's like, she said her biggest struggle right now, We're by a hospital. Yeah. You're hearing that ambulance.
Speaking of split personalities, these are secure doors, aren't they?
We're fine. Her biggest pain point right now was that she said she feels like she doesn't get taken seriously enough by like clients and some collaborators because she's so young. And what I was trying to say was you have to set the tone. And if you treat it like you're not young, then you aren't.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like perception is reality there.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, just to speak to Vince, your experience as somebody maybe kind of at the earlier in your career and kind of the kinds of work that you do, I think, you know, about where I started, in my first job, I had this experience where I was in a meeting with a bunch of people who were all more senior than me, who all knew more than me, who all had more time in at that agency than me. And when I walked into the room, I told myself, I'm going to act like I know what I'm talking about, regardless of whether or not I actually do. And I'm going to wait for somebody to call me on it. And until they do, I'm just going to keep going.
Did the time ever come? Did you ever get called on it?
It's worked for a couple decades now. I'm really hoping I can keep it up.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, honestly, you know, I hate to go into stuff that's as tried as fake it till you make it, but really that's it. A lot of it is confidence. A lot of it is believing enough in yourself and what you're doing to get past that, oh shit, I don't actually know what this is all about, so I'm just going to work my way through it.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that the further you get in your career, and especially when you start your own business, and I say when, not if, because I think all of us eventually go that route, you discover that most of the rest of the world is making it up as they go as
well. I was just going to say, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm just thinking about like, situations I've gone into where I felt super uncomfortable, and then I like think about it for a second and I'm like, wait, I was in a similar situation yesterday where I didn't notice. I didn't think about that. Everyone is like sitting there like awkward, uncomfortable, doesn't know. Man.
And it's especially true when you're doing this split personality thing where you assume a bunch of different roles and a bunch of different contexts to a bunch of different people. you have to kind of convince yourself that you are this chameleon, this shapeshifter that can be different things to different people, yeah. even if it's the first time being something. And I know for a fact, and I assume that you do too, Charles, that you, Grant...
If I don't know for a fact, I will act as though I do.
Whoa.
I know for a fact, Grant, you've done this. You've experienced this multiple times, breaking into new creative mediums, going on different perilous forays. And you can at least speak to how it feels to do that.
Yeah, well, two thoughts. One is like the classic thing I've said, which was said to me, which was jump in a network peer, right? And that's kind of how you approach it, and you just figure it out. And the other thing is, if we're talking about confidence, really to me, that just is like putting in your time on the research end. So like, that's what gives me confidence, is like a working knowledge of whatever thing we're talking about, whether that's like a brand or whether that's like a discipline. Like for filmmaking stuff, I've been diving in so deep like the past year, and now I have a really good working knowledge that I can pull from, and I feel much less underqualified than if I didn't know any of these things, right? And
less underqualified, yes.
Less underqualified. That's
a great way to put it.
I don't feel more qualified. I just feel less underqualified. Yeah. And that is the honest, you know?
No, no. And if you don't mind, I want to riff on that for a second. Yeah. Because here's the thing. Nobody does anything right the first time.
Yeah.
Everybody screws up. Everybody makes mistakes. And I think those are what you learn from. Those are where you become more skilled, more of, you know, a capable expert craftsperson at whatever you're pursuing. If you get it right all the time, you learn nothing from that experience. You know, if we all stood up and walked for the first time without falling down, we wouldn't learn anything from it. And it's a process of picking ourselves up after we screw up and going back to it that makes us confident and competent at what we do. So you can't really fast forward through that. You have to go through it.
Unfortunately, no shortcut.
No, and if there was, you wouldn't learn anything by taking it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. I mean,
no.
So I'm wondering if you could bounce us back a little bit.
Totally.
To perhaps a split personality moment for you, because you didn't start out in your career with Art Crane.
No. That path a little bit. I did not emerge from the womb saying, hey, bike poster
on a little bicycle.
Well, yeah. And I did not. My background professionally is as a copywriter and a creative director. That was my role on the agency side. I've always been better with words than pictures. And I think what I got from that experience was having the privilege of working with really, really talented graphic designers and art directors, people who had mastered the visual side of things as much or more than I was able to bring the verbal side of things to bear. And I think everybody has an appreciation for the visual medium of expression, and just getting a chance to learn from people and appreciate what you can do with just such simple techniques and composition. It was like going to school all over again, because everything that I loved about language from the verbal standpoint, I was able to get into from the visual standpoint and just discover this whole new way of communicating. And just that initial sort of split between the visual and the verbal, I think, is the beginning of that split personality side of the business.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, both you guys are, you know, you work as creatives and you understand how concepting works, where it's not necessarily the designer comes up with the visual ideas and the writer comes up with the words. Sometimes the designer has a brilliant headline and the writer is the one who said, what if it looks like this? And you know you've got a productive creative partnership where those titles don't mean anything. And you can both sort of exist on either side of that equation without anybody feeling like somebody's peeing on their tree.
As they say. That's a evocative metaphor, and I've kind of experienced that pretty viscerally sometimes. But
my olfactory system was actually springing to life there.
You picking up what I'm laying down?
Well put.
I wanted to high five you there, by the way. I was just picturing Vince and I working together. You know, just like, I feel like we have that sort of relationship.
It makes me reminisce of positive times.
Like we liked each other.
So I'm glad you brought it up like that. Have you ever experienced a situation in your Art Crankly duties that your writer side or your agency side has kind of creeped in and caused a barrier or caused a learning curve situation? Have the personalities sometimes kind of begun to refuse?
The warring personalities.
Yeah, well, and it's hard for me. It's hard for me to answer it in that context, because I think there's never been a point in working with Art Crank where I felt separate from the agency experience. Mm-hmm. I think the time that I spent working as a copywriter, as a creative director, as somebody who made stuff in a business context is exactly what gave me the base of knowledge and experience I needed to say, I can do this, because this is really just a different facet of what I've been doing all along. And to be able to look at what it takes to put on a successful event and create an experience for people and not see how different that was from, you know, creating a print ad or a TV spot or a website, but to see the similarities. Because really, fundamentally, I think we're all in the business of creating experience. Sometimes that experience is delivered through traditional media. Sometimes it's a digital media. What excited me about Art Crank the first time I did it, because I'd never put on an art show before, was the idea of, at a point in time where everything was becoming digital and everything was available online and all of the work that I was doing was sort of creating different environments and worlds in this virtual space where everything you wanted could be had at a keystroke or a touch of a button, I wanted to do something where people actually had to show up and be there in person. Something that wasn't available 24/7, 365. Something that didn't arrive within 48 hours with free shipping. Something where you, the consumer, if you cared about it, if you were invested in it, if you saw yourself in it, would care enough to show up and be there and be part of that experience.
And successfully so, I would say, man.
Yeah, well, and nobody was more surprised than me.
I love that. I was just thinking about this split when you go from the agency side where you have the clients,
yeah,
and maybe sometimes the clients you complain about or you know, but then you become the client, right? And you start to see the other side of things, which is, oh shit.
Well, it's funny. It's funny you should say that. When I was a creative director, I used to have this expression that I threw out flippantly, which was, you can always tell an entrepreneur, you just can't tell them much. That has become a lot less funny.
Yeah.
Sort of took up residence on the other side of the fence. God. It's like, yeah, oh, for sure. God, I'm that guy. I'm that. Yeah, I think I kind of am. And you make peace with that. And I think, again, you know, to take it part to the idea, back to the idea of split personalities, to be able to stand on the opposite side of the fence and see things from the perspective of, you know, what would have been your client, that makes me better at Art Crank, but it also makes me better as a copywriter and a creative director. Yeah. And I think we're best at what we do when we can put ourselves as much as possible in our client's shoes.
Yeah. I mean, I'd written down here when you were riffing before was two things, was empathy and perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you strike me as the person who is more capable of a split personality. In terms of like...
I'll take that as a compliment now.
Okay. Yes, it is. And it is. It is, I think. Because I think what that takes is empathy. And really, it's... When I say capable of having split personalities, I mean capable of being a really good creative, which means you're capable of seeing things from multiple perspectives, from putting yourself – or to be able to put yourself in the shoes of other people and see it from the different angles, which is really how we attack a lot of these problems, by being split personalities, by looking at it from this angle, this angle, this angle.
No, and I'll take that a step further, which is where I think you're going.
Yeah.
The definition – of being creative is benevolent schizophrenia, where you are able to adopt a variety of points of view at any given time and understand things from multiple perspectives. Mm-hmm. If all we ever do as creatives is represent our own point of view, it's like recording in mono.
Yeah.
You get maybe half the story, mm-hmm. and there's so much more out there. Mm-hmm. And that's what's interesting about making stuff up, is you get to be different characters.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think we might be remiss to go through this conversation without talking about potentially
the dark side.
Yeah, in a way, the detractors, the people who would say to someone perhaps who has a writing background who wants to start a poster show or an art show, uh-huh. and would say to you, "What do you know about art and showing art, and why should we attend your show?" To a similar point, why do you, Grant, someone with an advertising background, mm-hmm. more or less, what business do you have on a film set?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to those people, and how do you deal with kind of that friction?
I mean, yeah, that's the natural thing. It's scary as hell, and they're totally right, but the opportunity right now with access to information and with accessibility to tools especially and the collaborative nature of these communities is that you can listen. I think it sucks to be that person right now. It sucks. It does. And I don't blame them. It really sucks that it's more competitive now because there's so much access. Like, anyone can do anything. Whereas, you know, it used to be limited. And, that would kind of suck if you're not super excited about doing stuff. Oh, yeah. It's the best fucking time ever. If you're super curious, super passionate, super interested, you can be whatever you want. Yeah. I have no right to be anything, but I can be whatever I want.
Yeah, I would argue that it's always been that way. It's okay, just yes. that the means of doing it have become more widely accessible.
Right. That threshold
The entry point has gotten much more widely available. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to answer your original question about, you know, well, what... Why should you do this? You don't know anything about art. You don't know anything about running an art show. I think what's enabled us to be successful in that regard is having this combination of humility and trust. One, I started from the point of view that I didn't know anything. I knew I didn't know anything. So when you walk in as somebody who's a beginner, somebody who's a novice, an amateur, whatever you want to call it, you look for examples of how things are done well. And you try to take from those all the knowledge you can and aspire to create the kind of experience or the kind of end product. You become a student again, and that's what makes it interesting.
So exciting, right?
But if you get bored with learning, you get bored with life.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can get past that whole notion of, well, I need to be an expert. No, you don't. You just need to be curious enough to follow it and see what you can do. At the same time, I think one of the things that I learned from working in the creative business from the advertising and design side is that the people out there who do this for a living are so good at it and have invested so much of themselves in their work. You need to trust them. You need to do what you want your clients to do, which is to put faith in people you work with to do great things and to follow their skills, their expertise, and create something that they're going to be proud of and that's going to do you proud as well. And I think in what we've been able to do with ArtCrank, we've been successful with that approach 99% of the time, and that makes it really easy to ignore the 1% when we're not.
Man, well, we talk a lot about comfort zone and just like pushing that, and it's that, man, what an opportunity to get to learn stuff. You put that so well. If you get tired of learning.
Well summed, yes. Absolutely. Mm.
It's like I do stuff with words or something.
He's done this before. Well, Grant, maybe you want to springboard off that and talk about how you felt experiencing that same tension.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that we've talked about before too. I find myself saying that more and more. I think maybe after a season of it, it's like after all the conversations we've had.
Is there anything
though,
new
right?
left to say, Grant? Maybe this is our last.
No, but this, you know, a lot of the topic is already. You know, the show is based on a premise that is already well trod
exactly.
territory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
so if
it's
you
important.
Binge listen to season one, we're just getting up to speed now.
No, but it's important. It's important. I was going to say, I feel those same like pangs of frustration sometimes when you see someone doing something or someone who is maybe especially early in a craft, like putting something out there and you're like, you half roll your eyes at something right away. Mm-hmm. And then you fight that initial urge and you're like, fuck me. Like, what? You know what? Oh my God, I'm proud of that person for putting that thing out there. And you know what? That kind of sucks. But oh my gosh, I look back at the stuff I made in this medium then and And now, you know, the stuff I'm putting on this medium, now that I think about it, really sucks. But then, you know, that is the opportunity.
Yeah, okay. And I want to riff off of that for a second because it touches on something that I've encountered more recently, more through our social media presence, you know, with ArtCrank as a brand. And specifically, you talked about the idea of people early in their careers putting stuff out there and that tendency to judge and say, oh my God, isn't that awful? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that's different, and this is where I get to sound like the old guy, but the thing that's different now from, you know, when I was, you know, getting out of school, starting my career, is when you made mistakes, and sometimes a mistake is just doing the wrong thing. It's having a bad idea. Sometimes it's either unintentionally or even intentionally borrowing a little too heavy from something else successful. Yeah. You had a person, whether it was a teacher, a professor, a creative director, somebody else in your agency, who would be able to say, hey, I see what you're doing there and I know where you're coming from. but you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And to be able to give you that guidance and kind of put the stop sign up before things went too far. Mm-hmm. What freaks me out now a little bit is that people don't have that as much because yeah. when they share ideas through Twitter or through Instagram or whatever, all of a sudden it's out there for everybody. And I've had a couple instances where people have put stuff up that's sort of blatant ripoffs of other work that people have done for yeah. our show, and they describe it as an homage or something like that. And I get it, because when you're developing as a creative person especially, you learn by imitation. Mm-hmm. You say, I want to mm-hmm. be like them. I want to be like Aesthetic Apparatus. I want to be like, you know, Joby out in Portland or something yeah. like that. I want to do that kind of work. Precisely.
Episode 25.
Yeah. And you know, you do work that resembles that, you know, that person's or that entity's style, mm-hmm. but it becomes more of a copy than it does
oh, yeah.
an expression. But they don't get that chance. All of a sudden, it's out there for the entire world to see.
Fantastic point. And yes. even, oh, yeah, we've talked about that before. I look back at some of my early design work, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I didn't realize it then, but I look back, and I'm like, holy shit, I was just copying this. Like,
oh yeah,
I didn't trace that. Oh man, I had somebody. And this is an interesting thing to happen to me now is I look at that. I look at stuff early that I did that was like, oh my God, I was ripping them off and I didn't realize it. But I had somebody send me a link yesterday that were like, wow, this looks familiar. And I was like, oh wow. And hey, I was like, I was kind of excited because I was like, you know what? I realized a lot of my earlier work was this or early, but my earlier work was ripping it off and I didn't realize it. And it was just clearly a derivative of a thing I had done. And I was you know, that's kind of cool. Like I'm not mad about it at all.
Yeah. And you know, if you're lucky, you have the opportunity to make peace with it and learn from it without it sort of like destroying your career before it even starts.
Right. Well, this was an instance where it's like not anything that could really hurt me.
Right.
But I think the reason I'm not mad about it is because I realized my own indiscretions with that and they were unintentional. Although I look back at it, I was like, ah, oh, so bad. What is wrong with me?
And there's the humility.
Yeah.
He's talking about.
Yeah. Totally.
So I have a question, and maybe there's no answer, maybe it's a really simple answer. Do we give something up when we indulge in this ability or lifestyle to have split creative personalities? I think there would
delusion.
Be some...
Delusion?
Yes, there would be some detractors that might say, if you're not truly focused and dedicated, your creative work as a whole will suffer.
Yes and no.
So is your role in this podcast basically to play devil's advocate for everything?
No, not always. But
I will say he is when sometimes I vacillate, he pushes us forward.
Okay, and I don't want to get us off track, so please. No,
we are a yin and yang.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Truly.
But no, I'm genuinely curious on
that
both
is,
of your
that is opinions. That is the question though, and that is something you were kind of getting at. When we're talking about split personality, and I would say yes and no, and it depends.
Totally noncommittal.
But here's what I will say. Personally, something I've said to you before is that I'm never going to be the best at any one thing, but I might be at the most interesting combination, which is a direct answer to someone who says, jack of all trades, master of none. And frankly, that is even something that I'm pitching when we're in certain situations right now, you know, with some projects is like, we're kind of not saddled with as much experience. And I say saddled because sometimes it's a huge benefit, other times ignorance is bliss. Like we still have a youthfulness in terms of like, I don't really know how it's typically done here, which means we have a novel approach.
Oh yeah.
Which is the beauty of it. Of course, here's the big thing there though for me, which is something that I still run up against and, you know, you continue to run up against when you're trying to be multiple things is there are people who only do that thing and who really focus on that thing who are truly masters. But, you know, you have to find a way to get on the level. And that means putting in your time on the craft. And a lot of people, I think, that's where they fall off. And I think that was even something we had discussed, which was so many people want to do all that stuff, but they don't end up going. We were saying, yes. Without rehashing our conversation too much, it was... You have to go a certain way down the rabbit hole to get to a certain level so that it benefits you. Otherwise, you forget it. But if you learn Spanish and you get pretty decent at Spanish, then it becomes something that complements you learning French. Instead of half learning Spanish, then half learning this, and then they're not complementing each other.
Sure.
But if you get pretty good at design, then, you know, you can take that skill and apply it to,
And that's a big part of what I was talking about with being able to learn from designers and art critics. I would never describe myself as a designer. I'm not. I could not design my way out of a wet paper bag. But
well, it actually sounds pretty hard to do.
It seems like a not very good strategy.
Well, you know, if I had maybe a protractor or something, I'd do it. But anyway, this leads me down so many potential narrative threads. I'm going to try to keep them all together.
Oh, boy.
But, the root of this question was, do we lose something by being split personalities, by pursuing multiple avenues, yes, by applying ourselves in multiple directions? And what I would say is, I think in my parents' generation and your parents' generation, the expectation was that you would go to college and you would get a job out of college and you would keep that job for most, maybe, if not all.
Maybe you would go to college. My grandfather who spent 47 years at the craft factory.
Yes, precisely. Okay, you would go to school of some sort.
He spent some time in Korea for the war.
Yep, for the war, or you'd go in the military. But you would get a job with a company, and you would stay in that job for most of your life. My dad worked for Procter & Gamble for 35 years. Mm-hmm. So I went to college with the idea that whatever job I got getting out of school was going to be the next 3 to 4 decades of my life.
Oh, my God.
Which, of course, is completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
And I think for anybody, you know, who's in their 20s or 30s or 40s even, that experience sounds so unreal because all of us have had so many jobs and so many different professional experiences. And I think a big part of what that affords you, it's not always easy to decide what you want to do. Sometimes it's a process of elimination to figuring out what you don't want to do. You have to, like you were saying, you have to go a certain level, a certain distance down a path to understand that I liked this, but this is not for me, and this is not where I'm going to be happy. So I need to go back and take this someplace else. I mean, personally speaking, I am eternally one semester away from being a high school English teacher because I learned in the nick of time that I was going to be the world's worst high school English teacher and have saved countless generations of students from that miserable experience. But you have to go down that road. Mm-hmm. You can't just write it off without knowing it.
That's funny. Vince and I were talking about what we might talk about with you just before you got here. And I think I said, you know, based on the conversation I had with Charles a lot of what we talked about isn't what we are per se, but what we aren't. And so it's interesting to hear you really kind of come back around on that. And it's not just like being underqualified. It's not about like being so much a thing. It's about finding the way around it and the way that you don't want to go.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think especially when we've been involved in something that we love, that we believed in, that we've given years of our time to, that decision point gets harder to reach. But I got to tell you, the reason that I do Art Crank today is that back in 2009, when my last full-time job disappeared in the current recession to end all recessions, the day after I got let go from that agency, I woke up, and for the first time in as long as I could remember, I didn't have to go to a job I was tired of doing.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe how much of a relief that was. And I had to go all the way through that process of getting to sort of the end of that experience and saying, wow, you know what? Now that I don't have to get up and do this, I don't really miss it all that much. Mm. And there's part of me that feels compelled as if by reflex to go out and pursue that again, to go interview for that job, to go freelance at that agency. But everything I need to know, I know in this moment, which is that it's time to try something else.
I couldn't help but picture, I don't know if it was in the pilot or like the second episode of Breaking Bad. Are you familiar?
Yes.
But Walter White, he's talking to Jesse Pinkman and Jesse's like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, why are you freaking out? Like, I need to know this. And Walter White just like looks at him. He's like, I am alive. Or wait, what does he say? I am awake. I am awake. Yes. No, really, which is that you are turned on. I say that a lot, which is like, oh, I'm like just turned on to the world. Oh, I'm just turned on to what I'm doing.
And this opens up a whole other narrative thread that I should not go into right now because we need to take a mid-podcast break.
I'm so tempted. I was just so tempted to allow it though.
You know what?
It'll be there when we come back. I swear to God.
Okay. All right. We'll hold you to that.
This isn't got to be a first.
Our guest segued us. Wow, we just got one pulled out from under us, my friend Grant.
He split personality'd us. He took on the role of, I didn't want to say Vince there.
He outminced the Vince.
Outminced the Vince.
I'm
going to add that to my resume.
For that, Vince because, and it's almost the perfect episode for it, right?
It really is.
Like, wow.
Oh, goodness.
Well, as was so deftly done by our guest, Mr. Charles Yule. It is that splendid special time of the episode where we take a departure from the topic and we talk about something that's a little more off topic.
Per se, off topic.
Yeah, in a matter of speaking. And in this off topic topic, we're going to be a little bit closer.
We're going to be on topic.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about bicycling. Bicycles, bikes. As I mentioned earlier, very strong cycling culture here in Minneapolis. We're crazy about it. It's either us or Portland every year, best cycling city.
Can we call Portland, can we call Portland friend of the show at this point?
Portland friend of
the
show.
The entire city is friend of the show.
Yeah, we've had a disproportionate number of Portlanders.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, no, I was looking through your catalog. It's where do they record this? Because it might be out there.
We did do 4 or 5 episodes on the road, though, in Portland.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a blast.
Lots of fun. Oh, yeah. I love that city.
Yeah. Portland is Minneapolis at the speed of THC.
Wow. Now I'm
a new phrase. I hadn't heard that one.
We're going to save that one for the next time we have a Portland.
Perhaps for our break-in this episode.
Okay. Exactly. So, as someone who is the creator, founder, and proprietor...
Self-proclaimed king of biking.
Not exactly, but running our crate, what's your opinion on cycling? Are you a cyclist?
Absolutely.
Better be, damn
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I am morally, if not socially, obligated to be a cyclist. Yes. But no, and that's honestly a big part of the force behind the show. If I didn't love bikes, if I didn't love riding a bicycle, if I didn't appreciate the bicycle as a work of art itself, I don't think I could do the show.
Excellent.
What's your bike situation right now?
Yeah, what kind of bike do you
You say bike in the singular as though there's only one.
No. I say it in the same plural manner of a herd.
I believe there are currently 5 in the stable.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah. Do you do the whole gamut? Do you do the off-roading, the mountain biking? Do you do this
BMX, dirt bikes?
I mean, my entree to biking as a younger man was BMX.
Oh, really?
You know, that was
Are you familiar with Elise Post at all?
Louise Post?
No, Elise Post.
Elise Post. No, it's good. I am familiar with Louise Post.
A peer and friend from St. Cloud who is one of the most badass bikers.
Olympian.
Yeah, Olympian. And her boyfriend's the silver medalist.
Yeah,
I thought maybe you were still into the BMX scene, but you're not.
I hail from
dropping.
The Stu Thompson era.
We'll show notes.
BMX. That's kind of the old school.
We'll show notes him too, even though I've never heard of him.
You haven't?
Of Stu Thompson?
Stu Thompson?
Jeez. Oh. I'm sorry for him.
Yeah, because this is a podcast and not a visual media, we should probably not go down the Stu Thompson rabbit hole at this point. But let's just say that, a previous generation's hero.
Yes.
He was this Californian surfer god, man child on a bike. And his big thing was he jumped, I think, multiple Camaros on a BMX bike.
Yeah. Classic.
It was the most two Camaros, possibly 80s moment ever.
Beautiful. That's actually awesome. You probably got into it during the rise of the kind of, to put it in extreme quotes, extreme sports. Skateboarding became more mainstream, BMX became more mainstream.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think my experience with bicycles is, started like everybody's does, which is it's this first means of locomotion that is walking.
Yeah.
I want to hear Vince's take on this because I'm familiar with Vince's experience with biking, but go on.
Yeah, and I think then it becomes the way that you socialize and you hang out with your friends and you discover the immediate world around you.
Right around the neighborhood.
Precisely. Which is funny because now as a society, we've sort of come back to that and we don't ride bikes just for fitness. We don't ride bikes just to go fast. We ride bikes because it's a way to hang out with our friends and get from point A to point B.
Yep.
Anyway, for me, it started with BMX, which I was into for a long time. And then I discovered music and girls, and that was sort of the end of BMX. I should note that I discovered girls. Their discovery of me was still a few years
ago. Yes.
But I discovered the principle of girls.
Yeah, I think you meant the television program.
No.
That's a couple years ago.
That would be skipping ahead quite a bit in my case.
Oh, okay.
I came back to bikes right after I got out of college. In part just because of the transportation side of things, where it's I didn't want to spend all my time in a car. And it's there was this thing I used to like to do where you got on a bike and you went places. And from there, I kind of actually dove back into mountain biking because for me, that was the most like BMX. That was kind of like the new BMX thing where you have these bikes that are meant to go on dirt trails and you did jumps and cool stuff like that. Then all the guys that I rode mountain bikes with started riding road bikes. So
you got a road bike.
Basically, yeah. And then it ends with you having five bikes in your basement. So, yeah.
That's fascinating. Well, I'm very bolstered to hear that you're a big bike enthusiast.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know for sure that you would be, even being the founder.
You wouldn't have to necessarily.
Yeah, but
you can appreciate things that you don't participate in. Like, I love art, but you know, in that same way.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
but it's very cool to hear. Do you have any snow bike equipment? The snow tires, the big tires?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't. I haven't gone the fat bike route. That's the one thing that's kind of a bridge too far right now. I think about
big boned. Yeah, term.
Well, yes, precisely. The
big framed.
Yes. The Rubenesque bikes.
There it is. Okay.
Yes.
To me, it's sort of like, you know, do you buy a snowmobile? Something that you get to use for this season of the year, and then that's it. I wouldn't get enough use out of a fat bike to make it like a regular
thing. Though the argument in Minneapolis might be that your warm weather bikes are only viable five months out of the year.
And this is the thing, you know, moving up here from what I discovered after I moved up was the South. I'm still in the process.
I love that.
I am still in the process of making peace with this winter thing after a couple decades.
The acclimatization never really happens. No. I've lived here my whole life.
You just sort of deal with it after a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that was great.
So, Vinny, please tell us about your experience
with
bikes.
I'm such a bad Minneapolitan. I'm a terrible
one. No, come on.
I didn't learn.
Are you going to be downgraded to Minneapolis?
So,
is that how it works?
I don't know if we can like drop in the part where he was like, I discovered bikes like all people discovered bikes immediately.
I think that's a good enough recap of the fact that I didn't learn how to bike, not for lack of trying on the part of my beloved parents, but I didn't take to biking naturally. I didn't really learn how to bike until my early teens. And so then I would ride them around a bit, but never really got comfortable on them. Then when I got to the city, I decided, you know, to, as someone who doesn't drive or own a car, it's a pretty practical way to get around. Oh boy, was I wrong. I am actually blind in my left eye, which causes a massive blind spot, the same place that cars are coming from.
Yeah, well, to say nothing of depth perception, which is also kind of important.
Both are important.
That's why, as you probably noticed, his eyes just pointing straight up into his head this whole time.
Not true. People at home who haven't seen me.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't want to look at me either. I can't blame him. Right?
A year ago, about, I tried to rededicate myself to learning how to bike because I thought it would be practical and fun. And so a friend of mine, Nathan McIntyre, fellow rider, who was kind enough to borrow me one of his many bikes, and I took it, and I was going to drive it home, ride it home from work. I couldn't even use the right term. I was going to ride it home from work one day, and I only lived about maybe 15 blocks away. And I got so terrified halfway through my trip that I got off and walked it the remainder of the way and walked it all the way back the next morning and returned it to him.
I've had an experience like that, only it was in high school and it was because I was too drunk to ride.
Okay.
See, now drinking and biking, very dangerous.
I know this is an audio medium. Where is it?
That is an impressive scar. I can almost see it.
Can you?
Yeah,
we'll show up the scar.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I know that was from that was a biking and or a drinking and biking situation where the curb, it was an unfinished curb, and I was on my road bike and I was trying to go up on it and I didn't notice it was like,
it's always the equipment, never the operator.
Yeah,
and it ended with me in a Coburn's. Are you familiar?
Oh yes,
grocery stores. We went in there. I was with two of my friends. So this was after we had been, and now you're down the town and at SESU. I'm from St. Cloud, St. Cloud City University. And we were like, I was like, I need to sanitize this. They had the hand sanitizer. I was just bleeding everywhere.
Yeah.
They had the
because at that point, Coburn's is just as good as urgent care.
It was close enough.
Yeah.
And what was the closest? And they had this, like, that hand sanitizer at the cashier's.
Ouch.
And I was like, can I please use this? Like, she's like, no problem. And I, like, squeezed a bunch into my hand. I started rubbing it. And I just started just yelling, screaming. And I had this tale recounted to me over Christmas break because I was with a few of my high school friends.
Shocker.
And I had this this weird thing that I used to do, which I kind of still do, but I just get injured less because I don't play, like, sports. But I used to just spit whenever I got injured. I would just like my first inclination. Like, I would just like start spitting.
Yeah,
like crazy. Just
sort of Pavlovian relaxation.
Yeah. And so I just like was like spitting and screaming in this cobra.
Yeah, I'm not proud of it.
guessing they weren't either. But
that sums up your experience with bikes, though.
Oh, because
spitting and screaming, the Grand Spaniard experience.
Still cycle today, though.
Yeah. I mean, not in the winter. It kills me the winter. I actually got reintroduced to biking. One, because I started getting into the advertising scene, which is like so into it. And so I started getting more interested in it. And then I also had some knee issues.
Oh yeah.
And I couldn't run for like the last 3 years, which killed me because I love running. And actually, honestly, I like running more than biking just because it's like more impact, I think. And it's just like more visceral to me. But, yeah, I just rediscovered it, and I had an uncle who has an old road bike who he hooked me up with, or that he hooked me up with, and, yeah, I, like, love riding now.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, real good. And, like, last winter, I had, what do we call those things, where you can put your tire up?
Wheelies?
No. So I have my bike here, and I put it up. I'd borrowed one of these things. What is it? You can put the wheel on the back thing, and then you put the tire in the front, and I could pedal inside.
Oh, trainer.
Trainer, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Like, yes.
That was a fascinating game of charades we just played.
He's acting it out.
I don't think I won, but God, yes.
All the visual bits we did on this.
Yes. We call that riding nowhere.
Yes. I rode a lot last winter. Yeah. Nowhere.
No.
So I love biking. I don't have a fixie, as they call it, but I'm going to get one.
A fixie is those hipster gems.
Yeah. I might get one just to go to Art Crank.
That's good.
When's the next show? Is it in the spring?
Yeah, I'm thinking probably May.
Okay,
May sounds good.
That's a good time.
Looking forward to it.
I'm going
to
be there.
But it also kind of goes to show that this city really is entrenched uniquely in bike culture. And sometimes I feel a very real societal and peer pressure to be into bikes. Yeah. It's such a weird thing. But it's also a cool thing. Of all the things your city could be obsessed with, I think cycling is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, person could do worse than.
Can I ask you a question? And maybe this is like a closing thought on biking.
You certainly
may. So I had a realization. I've had more and more realizations that, like, I used to think my dad was more of a dick than he is, which is that, like,
it's kind of a universal human experience.
Thanks, Scott. Well, it was his 50th on Saturday. We celebrated, and so I kind of like went through it again, and I revealed a couple of things to him. I was like, hey. I get it. But one thing was, like, I used to leave my bike, because I biked everywhere as a kid, and I had pegs, and, like, that was what we did.
Yeah, totally.
Amazing. What a delight. But I used to leave my bike in the yard, and I would ride in through the yard, and he would yell at me, and I'd be like, that guy's such a dick. And I told him this when he came down to the cities last weekend. I was like, hey, listen, I kind of used to think you were a dick about this stuff. I'm sorry. You were so right. Like, I can't imagine. Like,
did he appreciate that?
Yeah, he totally did.
Yeah, the process of becoming an adult is mostly apologizing to your parents stuff that you did.
And there were so many things.
So the question was really just like, have you had any, like, do you have kids?
No.
Okay.
We have dogs.
Okay.
I have a dog, actually, at this point.
But did you have any moments with your dad like that, specifically around biking or not?
Well, I mean, the short answer is yes. Okay. And I'm very fortunate. My dad's an engineer, mechanical background, loves machines, loves taking things apart.
My dad too.
Well,
he's not an engineer. I take that back.
No, but shortly after I learned to ride a bike, the first thing he did was like, okay, if you're going to ride this, you need to know how to fix it.
Whoa.
So, we'd take the bike down to the shop and take it apart. And it's like, there's all these little like components and ball bearings and parts and pieces that if you didn't know what you were doing would be super intimidating. But it's like, I'm got my dad here who knows this stuff. And he's like, no, you need to know how to do this. You need to know how to take your bike apart and put it back together. And that's one of the things that I'm most thankful for him is teaching me how to do that. And mostly just to not be intimidated and afraid of this piece of machinery and to develop that kind of relationship with it where it's like, you know what? I can fix this. And that's part of where that confidence comes from.
That's a lot like, I think, a lot of our creative pursuits,
you know?
And that's, I think, just like me diving into the history of a thing and the elements of it and trying to learn those, you then get the confidence to create or to solve or to...
Yep. Once you know how it works, it becomes a lot less intimidating. Once you know how to take it apart, It's no longer this big model.
Which is why, which is why we start by deconstructing other people's work, and a lot of our early work looks like theirs, right?
What makes this what it is?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounded borderline planned, guys. I'm a little worried.
But. Okay, if you could turn to page 7 in the script.
No, that, I mean, well said. No. And it brings us very smoothly to some last words. And cool. We were hoping that you, like our guests usually do, would indulge us by answering 2 questions that we have for you.
I would be delighted.
And we're going to number them out for you.
All right.
Don't worry.
Question number 1.
The first, how can those listening to this show their support for you? And the second is, if you wanted those listeners to take one thing away from your time on the program, what would that be?
Okay. Best way to support Art Crank and what we're doing is basically just to follow us online on Twitter specifically, at Art Crank, on Instagram at Art Crank. I'm not going to give too much away right now, but some pretty big changes are coming down the pike. So now is a good time to catch up with us.
get on the wagon. It's not a bandwagon yet. It's still just a wagon. You have an opportunity.
There's not even a band yet.
I will say too, and I think I told you this last time I saw you, was I love what you guys do with social, what you do with social. Yeah. And I love following you on Instagram. It's so cool because you're posting all of these posters from your post, all these posters from these other shows that I don't get to go to. And I get this whole different context and this whole different take on this universal theme. And it's so cool to see a Chicago poster or a Portland poster. It's like, this is so cool.
Yeah. And that's a big part of the fun of it is that we have all these experiences.
What a cool community.
It's such a cool community.
That's what I love about this.
And there's more of that to come. And I'll just leave that out
there. And if our grant comes to your city, go to it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's also another way.
Or, I mean, go to the closest city.
Yes, go to wherever we happen to be.
Yeah. Find one. Grant and I can both vouch for that. It's a great experience in person.
Oh, it's such
good people. It was a lot of fun. It's a blast. It absolutely is a
fun. And it does my heart good to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So for question number 2, what's the one thing that I would encourage people to do? And I'm gonna tell a little bit of a story around this.
Please, man.
This goes back to when I was a kid. Especially during the summer when we were out of school, my mom used to basically push us out the door at 9 o'clock every morning and just tell us to get out there to go figure things out. And if it was a rainy day or if the weather sucked or if we had to stay inside for whatever reason, instead of just watching TV, she's like, why don't you write a story? Why don't you draw a picture? And just that idea of using your time to create it taught me the value of that and how important that was. So I would say, if you take nothing else away from this, go make something. Go create something. You'll never be sorry. Whatever it leads to, whatever comes from it, just go make something and see what happens.
Well, I think that is very much in line with Grant and my personal ethos and the ethos of the show. It's something I wish I could live more every day, but I do strive to, and I think we can all strive to do that. It's
I think this advice. Even this podcast is an extension of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It is us creating something. And I think it is an exciting time. And when we're talking about split personalities, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be.
You can.
That doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean... And you're going to have to get comfortable with this idea of being the amateur and having someone scoff at you. And yes, of course, you're underqualified. But if you can get comfortable with that stuff, it's like, man, there's so much room for growth. And it's so exciting. Yeah. And I'm just pumped about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if we're looking to contextualize it, we say on this show a lot, go do something new. But in this conversation, it's go be something and go be something new.
Yep.
And don't be afraid of shipping that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking.
And if you don't mind, I want to do one more thing to rip off the idea of split personalities and multiple experiences. And maybe this fits, maybe it doesn't. But, bringing it back to cycling and that experience and the idea of putting yourself in a different frame of mind, I think one of the most valuable experiences I've had in my life is being able to travel. Because when we get into daily routines, whether it's our jobs or school or whatever our lives is, a lot of us can go through the first 2 hours of our day without thinking about what we're doing. We just kind of go through our routine. We follow those same steps. We do what we do. And when you travel, when you leave your city, when you leave the country, especially if you go to a place where you don't speak the language, those routines are gone and you have to learn all that and you have to live very deliberately and you have to figure out how to, in the language of whatever place you're existing, order that cup of coffee or obtain that croissant or purchase that banana or whatever it is that you're doing. And by doing that, your memory and your experience of that, that simple moment, that one thing, is so much more significant and so much more meaningful. And the thing that I love about biking, even just the simple experience of riding my bike from my house to my office, two places which are always the same every day, is that that experience is never the same twice. And every time I'm out there turning the pedals with my face in the wind, even if I'm going on the same streets, even if I'm following the same path every day, what I see, what's around me is different every day. And just that experience, in even in that period of time, I'm living a little bit more deliberately and a little bit more aware than I was under another circumstance. So
totally. I mean, we talk about that all the time, right?
Very well said.
Which is that we get there's
complacency and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And that the more frequently we can surround ourselves with the new, the more likely we are to incorporate something new into the way we do things.
Yep. Yeah. So what I was trying to say, I think, was that I tell Vince this all the time, which is,
and he never believes you.
I'm like, oh man, I'm so lucky. I'm like so lucky that I'm so curious, and I'm like, oh wow, that's such a gift.
It's a boon.
Like, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky. But you know what? On that same token, like, you can cultivate curiosity.
Yeah.
And if you can put yourself in those positions to be uncomfortable, man, what a...
No. Well, curiosity is a necessary precondition for creativity.
Yeah.
You can't be one without the other.
No way around that, and we're lucky for it.
Hey, man, thank you for taking the time with us, and thank you for...
This was a delight. It really
thank you
was.
For the work you're doing with ArcRank, too, man, because that's, like, it's a really generous...
I look forward
and,
to
like,
it every year.
...unique thing, because it gives people opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise have, and I think it cultivates a new uncomfortability, a new curiosity, a new opportunity to make stuff in a different context, and... Man, I love it. It's really cool.
And also, thanks for coming into the studio.
Yeah,
no, my pleasure.
Great.
You know,
great.
I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Yeah, they're freaking great.
They're getting agitated, so we better go. But we do have one final request for you, if you would be so kind.
I am your humble servant. Ask
yes,
away.
Yes.
Please sign us off with our customary ship it, if you would.
Ship it?
Yeah, because we really believe in this idea of shipping it.
Ship it!